Hello and welcome to our latest Live at the Brentwood show. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital. Happy to be back with you on Sunday morning from Saratoga, sitting at a picnic table at the Brentwood. The weather is a little foreboding, I'm not going to lie, but it sounds like the precipitation meant to come in is not going to amount to all that much, according to our friend at G1 Handicapping, Marshall Sterling, on Twitter. I trust him implicitly in these matters, and I'm very much hoping that he is correct. If you hear some disruption during the show, that's probably us running for cover, but I'm hoping that's not going to be necessary. Very happy to be joined for the first time on the In the Money airwaves in an overdue visit. An old friend, we sat next to each other in the press box for many years.
Years.
From the Daily Gazette, it's Mike McAdam. Mike, how are you today?
Terrific. Thanks for having me, Pete. I guess I'm breaking my maiden in a sense here, but hopefully it won't be off the turf. I think we will survive that whole ordeal. We're supposed to get some rough stuff in the afternoon, but it won't be extended periods, and we're good to go right now.
All right. Well, we're hoping turf-wise everything's going to work out. Well, we sit here on the Sunday after a unusual and historic Whitney Day. I had the pleasure of reading your work this morning. Some great stuff, as always. Curious, when you think back on yesterday as we sit here the day after, what memory sticks out the most from what we saw yesterday? What are the big – you have a number one takeaway for us.
The number one takeaway for me was talking to Al Stahl behind the clubhouse afterwards. And we've been in contact with him since the beginning of the meet. We were here early in the morning to watch Tom's d'Etat gallop a couple times. And you can just tell the preparation, all the work they put into this thing to get this guy ready for this race. And then, boom, you snap your fingers and one step out of the gate and it's all up in smoke. And so talking to him afterwards, and Tom Amos actually happened to walk by on his way to the paddock and patted him on the shoulder when we were interviewing him and said, "Sorry, man, that sucks." And everybody can empathize with that camp. Now, stiff upper lip for Al Stahl, because, you know, he said repeatedly, that's horse racing. He's seen it before. He'll see it again. But it's got to drive you through the ceiling, out of your mind. All the work, all the preparation. This horse was ready, right, fit, ready to go, facing a tough field for sure, but a legit favorite. And boom, gate opens, and thanks for coming. Here's your consolation prize. Oh, that's right. There is no consolation prize. So I felt bad for him, but, you know, again, that's racing. They all realize that they'll live to fight another day. We'll look very much forward to the next time you can get to see him run.
Yeah, I felt cheated as an observer. You know, we wanted to see this showdown, and I feel like we just didn't learn what we wanted to learn. Probable was very good, yeah. But with this absolutely perfect trip with the horse to beat in the market's eyes, having that tough beginning. I guess one question I have for you, if you've heard anything about seeing a horse like Tom's d'Etat, who's had obviously physical issues in the past, seeing him break in a tangle like that, obviously the way he ran on suggests there was nothing physically wrong with him. I think you could make an argument given the trouble. He was even best in the race. But do we have any news on how that horse is doing today? This is one I was just hoping to hear. There was no lingering ouchiness.
I can't speak for this morning, but I can speak for when we talked to Al right after the race, and he did have a chance to visually inspect the horse. He said He didn't hit himself. He didn't hit the gate. There's no external signs or lacerations. In fact, he was the choir boy in that starting gate, just standing there, and has absolutely no history of gate trouble or bad starts or anything like that. That's like the one thing you can throw out of the equation, you know, with his races in the past. So yeah, he did a visual, inspection of him on the track, and he said, "We didn't see anything. You know, he didn't grab a quarter or anything like that." So horse should be fine. It's just one of those mystery, nebulous parts of racing. Just like shake your head. And but I agree with you. You did feel cheated, whether you had any dime one on that race, that you wanted to see how that whole scenario would play out. 5-horse field, but it was very competitive, and everybody had a legit shot, and it would have been beautiful just to see the scenario in the stretch if that hadn't happened to him.
I want to ask you, there was some chatter around about Tis the Law and him getting out on the track for a workout yesterday. Were you in attendance for that? And what did you think? And what was the scuttlebutt coming out of that for our anti-post derby favorite?
I got to tell you, I broke a personal record yesterday. We've been we've been getting our temperatures checked, and they've been handing out these wristbands to get on track every day since the day before the meet started. And yesterday I broke my personal record for the longest line that I had to wait in of cars to get my temperature. I was number 7 in line. This was 10 after 5 in the morning. So I ran into the backstretch worker bottleneck. But yeah, I was there. And you know, Barkley Tagg, his trainer, was our best friend for a couple weeks there when he was sending him out after the renovation break at 8:45. We were loving that action. And we were 5:30 on Saturday. I was like, okay, I guess I know what I'm doing at 4:30 on Saturday morning. So yeah, we were there. This horse is clockwork. I mean, every one of his last three breezes have been almost identical. I mean, you could look at, there's very small deviation in the, they said we want, you know, a minute for 5 furlongs, and he was right around that within, you know, a couple tenths of a second each time. He was 59.94 yesterday after like a minute and 3/10 the week before, and another 59 plus the week before that. So this horse is so easy to deal with. They haven't had a hiccup since he threw a shoe after the Holy Bull, and they got over that quickly. I mean, it's just been steady perfection every step of the way for this horse. So you just kind of keep your fingers crossed when you get through a couple more days and get to Saturday.
I'm very excited to see what happens. I was talking Derby, but of course I should be talking Travers. This is the run-up.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. It's such a weird meet for us because everything is sort of inside out. Usually it's very intense at the beginning and intense at the end when you get into Travers and closing weekend. Now when you fold the Travers into the middle of the meet, which is next week, you know, suddenly we've got two very intense weeks in the middle, and then we get a little bit of a lull after that. But yeah, Travers.
Yes, Travers. We'll be doing plenty on the network about that, including right here at the Brentwood. Current plans are to have a little Wednesday night after the races, I guess we're going to say invitation only, get together to properly kick off Travers Week. If you're a listener interested in attending, it will just require a donation to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, trfinc.org/players. Oh, Mike has his face mask. I've got mine somewhere here. It's around. Maybe I stuck it in my pocket. The TRF face masks are a must-have accessory for this Saratoga season. But it's going to be fun. My thought was, I'm almost going to make it like an open mic. I'll have a more sophisticated setup than we have today. And maybe this mic will be down one end, and I'll be down this end talking to whoever decides to pony up the money. Now, granted, if you want to make a donation and just come and listen and hang out and drink delicious cocktails and eat some pizza, you can do that. But I'm hoping to get some other folks that are long overdue to make appearances on the show, and we'll look ahead to Travers, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But, Mike, you mentioned some of the things that are unusual about this Saratoga meet in terms of the stakes schedule. Obviously, the most unusual thing of all is the fact that we have no fans over there. You've got the nifty, today's color is green, wristband to get yourself access to the plant. Very simple question here with a long preamble. What the heck is it like over there?
It's the same thing every day, day after day. You walk in, horse wins race, right story, go home. There's no context, there's no atmosphere whatsoever. It's so weird. You get used to it, but you don't really get used to it because there's so many like benchmarks and landmarks and things that you expect to see and experience every time. Just simple routine stuff like walking in every day. Like I expect to see Paul Maddies and his crew have their purple tablecloth set up over the on the picnic tables by the Big Red Spring. You don't see that anymore, and like for the first couple days you're like, wait, where's my purple tablecloth when I walk in from the press lot? It's not there, along with 15,000 other things that you see every day. So it is very weird. I'm writing a column actually today that'll run in Monday's paper, just kind of a almost midway, you know, looking ahead to the Travers, but what it's been like so far. And I can tell you, walking around the grounds, one of the metaphors I'm going to use is it's like, you know, one of those undersea cameras going through, you know, touring the sunken Titanic, because there's like detritus from last season still laying around and a lot of dirt and pigeon stuff, you know, that we've been dodging. That's the other good thing. They have us set up in an auxiliary press area on the Turf Terrace restaurant, which is open air, sure, and which is a wonderful place to watch the races until a pigeon dive bomb, you know, drops a bomb on your laptop, which has happened to Lee Seth Merrill and yesterday Tim Wilkin live rounds too. So yeah, I'd like to get to next year just to get rid of that aspect of it. But it is very surreal, and surreal is the wrong word for it. But it's just strange, and it's the same thing every day. And you know, you just, from a storytelling standpoint, you lose certain components of your story, and you know, the atmosphere in the background and the crowd noise and everything. And it's you get used to it because it becomes routine, but you never actually get used to it.
I like that image of the Saratoga backyard as this ghost ship floating on the ocean, that there's still some of these remnants of good times past. Does it present a challenge? It's interesting to think of when what you're writing in your story, you know, it's a bit like the iceberg theory, right? You're covering what's above the water, and then there's these 7/8 under the water that don't necessarily make the story. And some of that has to be the atmosphere of this major sporting venue and all the energy therein. Does not having that energy and having it be a little more seemingly rote/routine, does it make your job as a journalist any harder?
Not harder, just different, I would say, because, you know, you're supposed to use all your senses, of course, so you start to kind of observe other things and you notice other things. I mean, it sounds like, the popcorn cooking in the pan on the stove when they come to the finish line, because you can hear every crack of the riding crop, and which under different circumstances, normal circumstances, you wouldn't hear something like that. Now, I don't know if that's anything you would bother to use in your story unless you heard one at kind of a key moment or something like that. But there's other stuff out there. You know, we try not to incorporate the hawk that lives there that's been bothering the pigeons into our stories. I mean, that's an us thing. That's not a race thing. But there's other things. I will say that our trainer Orlando Noda has become kind of a minor star in his own right.
He's a rooter.
That's putting it mildly. And that's a gross understatement. He single-handedly, he's won 4 races at the meet already, including 2 in one card the other day, single-handedly trying to make up for the 15,000 people probably not there. And I'm not kidding. And it is the greatest thing. I tweeted out the other day when he won his second one on that card. And I said, when they win, we all win. Because, I mean, and it's true, because like the passion and just the pure unbridled joy is just really fun to watch and hear. He's loud.
Yeah, I had heard that. I didn't realize to what extreme it was. And another winner yesterday. Have you dove into his backstory yet? I'd love to hear. I don't know much about it. I think I heard that he worked for Cassie, and I heard that not that long ago he was in much more of like a foreman role at another operation. What accounts for his meteoric rise to stardom at the Saratoga meet?
I don't know. I haven't gotten around to actually getting his story yet, but I will eventually. I think I'll be forced to if he keeps, making all that noise on the apron. But I mean, I think this is only his second year. He's only been a licensed head trainer for like a year and a half or so. So he's very, very fresh. T Loves a Fight is one horse that kind of he made a name with a little bit and who ran at the meet. He didn't win, but he's still very much a fresh face, and we will get around him eventually, especially if he keeps going. Oh, and by the way, when that horse First Line ran the other day, they immediately nominated him to the Travers, which is, probably speaks to the insanity level as well. And I believe they're not going to be that ambitious, maybe wait for the Jim Danny. But, a horse just broke his maiden, and suddenly they're looking at races like that. So we'll probably see and hear from him again before the meet's over.
Here, especially. Nice grab on that mask blowing off the table. I was going to say, baseball player?
Where did that breeze come from? I'm not going to argue with it as long as it doesn't put my face mask into the garden bed over there.
I thought between the footwork you showed and the good grab, you were a second baseman, turning the double play at some point.
No, I was
in your
just
life.
A desperate person using every limb possible to keep this thing from blowing away. No.
I got to ask, so you're somebody who would take the busman's holiday in the old days. We would be working in the press box Wednesday through Sunday. And then on Monday, you would be down there amongst the crowd at the paddock bar, just as a racing fan, enjoying yourself. How has that evolved with not only getting rid of Mondays last year, but then the unique circumstances this year? Are you getting to enjoy Saratoga as a horse player at all?
This year, hardly at all. Last year, which was the first year where they started the Monday, Tuesday dark days, and I lost my degenerate Monday, as I call it, which basically, I'll give you the short story on that. I'd be off on Monday, so what would I do? Stay home and do my laundry? No, come here and get cleaned out, basically. Because, those Monday cards could be a little rough around the edges, but I didn't care. Action play every race. I don't care what form of animal they were loading in the gate. As long as it had motility and was drawing breath, I was going to bet on it. And so those days are gone. So last year it kind of evolved into a situation where my boss would notice that maybe I did something on my day off or had a long shift or something and said, hey, do you really need to be there on Wednesday? And I say, no, the stakes race doesn't really need to be covered. The card isn't that great. I'm in good shape with the weekend stuff. Yeah, no, I don't really need to be there. He said, well, take Wednesday off. And I said, so then I would be there. So that's the new
Degenerate Wednesday
was the new, and, you know, usually start with a 10:30 Guinness over at King's Tavern, handicapping the card. And it was the whole package. So I was able to salvage something out of last year. This year, though, I haven't figured it out yet.
Wednesday is the new Monday. Well, we'll get you to one of our fun viewing party events. We'll get a little bit. We had a little bit of the flavor of the old Paddock Bar / DG Lounge Degeneracy yesterday. We posted up for most of the day over at Walton Whitman Brewery. The air conditioning was on. The distancing was in effect, and we got to enjoy several races. And it like almost. I mean, it didn't feel normal, but there was like that. It was good to get that semblance of camaraderie that, of course, the racetrack is known for. And from a horse player's point of view, very difficult to live without. So hopefully we'll have a chance to get you involved in one of those things as well as a key member of our Paddock Bar team. We are going to get to these races at some point, I promise. But I did have one more question. I just wanted to get a little bit of your horse player origin story. You've been covering sports for the Daily Gazette since 80. I wasn't going to make you say it.
I don't mind dating myself. That's fine.
87. Did you come to racing through that professional affiliation, or were you dyed in the wool long before that?
Nope, 100%. It was a professional origin. I grew up in Rochester, which is near Finger Lakes, but my family never went there. So then I was force fed it when I actually had a brief stint with the Troy Record in 87, and that was my first Saratoga meet. And then I started at the Gazette December of that year. But so my first Travers would have been Java Gold in 87, which is also a little bit of my gambling origin story. Well, it's entirely my gambling origin. Back in the day, you may remember this, the DRF used to have something called a mud mark, which was just a big black asterisk next to the horse's name in the past performances. And that was a nice, simple little tool for a dope like me, because it meant that the horse would like an off track. And I didn't even have to do any research. I just saw that. So Java Gold had one of those next to his name. I said, there's my horse right there. I put $5 to win on him. I got $20 back. I was like, snap my fingers again, easy game. And it's been all downhill since then. But I was kind of hooked right there. I was like, wow, I gave them $5 and they gave me $20 back, and my horse won in the slop just like he was supposed to with that mud mark in the form. And man, this isn't complicated at all. Little did I know.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. Now, if we were to, through the magic of a time machine or something else, conjure up 1986 pre-working in the media around here covering horse racing and tell him about 2020, Mike McAdam, now betting horses and coming to the races on his off day when he doesn't have to be there, what would he say?
That person or me?
the young version of you. What would you make of yourself?
Probably disappointed in a lot of areas, but not that one. I'd be okay with that. It was just something that I was never exposed to. That person back in 86 would say, who do you like in the late pick five today? And the person in 2020 would say, damn if I know, but I have some ideas. I'll give them to you and do with them what you will.
Well, that's a perfect segue, as I'm sure it was designed to be, into talking about today's late pick five.
We know about transitions.
The very, very good stuff. Deft handling. We start with race number 6. We've got 2-year-old maidens going 6 furlongs on the Saratoga dirt. How did you want to get this one kicked off? Who do you like in here?
I went with a 4-horse spread. I got the 4, 5, 6, and 8 in particular. Let's see. I think I like the 5 a little bit just because showing some good workouts.
That's the run happy, isn't it?
Correct. My Alluring Lady, trained by Danny Gargan, who's had a little slow start to his meet. He's got Manny Franco, who I'm expecting to kind of maybe heat up anytime now. So just based on the works, that was one that I looked at, but I wanted a little bit of a spread in the 6th race. Today, I got 4-horse spread in the first 2 legs, and I'm going to be hanging on by my fingernails, you know, toward the second half.
Makes sense, and I get that approach. I'm definitely with you that my Alluring Lady is one to include in here, eschewing the New York bred ranks to go for the $100,000 run happy baby bonus. I have to see that as a sign of confidence. I'll also mention the 9 beautiful farewell. I thought it was encouraging to see Castellano keep the call here, and I thought would get a good forward trip. And, you know, just to, you know, we don't want people to get beat in spread races. So if you can, and sometimes it's as many as you can afford in a spread race. So I'll also mention the 2 Spun d'Etat with valuable experience, caught a little bit of cash on the debut run, and I'm going to leave in the mix. But I'm with you. I like the idea of getting things off to a spready start in this late pick 5. Let's move on to our 7th race. We've got 3 and up claimers for $25,000 going 5.5 on the Saratoga turf. And this was a race you've already tipped your hand about spreading. And right. I can see that again. Dowse's Beach, the 2, I thought projected to be the best speed and could bounce back after a very tough trip last time. Fits like a glove on the races 2 and 3 back. Duncastle, I thought was interesting with speed, getting in light, not that far off the best of these, and I thought would be a big price. And then Discretionary Mark, another I thought would be a solid number, coming off a long break that could move forward, has back races that fit. Who were you going to use in your spread in race number 7?
My spread is 1 Duncastle, 4 Banana Thief, 5 Shiraz, and I got the 8. Which is Kitten's Cat. I kind of was focused on the 5 Shiraz. Ran some good speed figures that were better than these, at, you know, toward the end of last year, and ran a pretty good number last time winning. You know, I expect Luis Saez, who missed a bunch of the middle or the early part of the meet because he was quarantined for COVID, to kind of hit his stride once his business starts gathering steam again. So I think he's going to be riding with a purpose right now. And also, first off, the claim is a pretty decent percentage, 22 for Falcone. So there seem to be some ingredients there, and I didn't spread just for spread purposes. I mean, this was one of the tougher races. I did like 1, as like you mentioned, Duncastle, as maybe a little bit of the price play here. So we got 4 in the 6th, the first leg, and 4 in this leg, and I kind of like Shiraz, the 5.
We'll get this narrowed down eventually, I swear. Let's move on to race number 8. It's a 3 and up New York bred allowance going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Where were you going to center your action in here, Mike?
We only have 2 here. I got the 3 Riken, and the only reason I didn't single the 8-5/11 Fort Worth, because first of all, I didn't want to single anybody in a field this big. But also, I wasn't sure. Maybe you can speak to this a little better. That 11 post in a 6 furlong dirt race, I wasn't 100% certain if that was how much of a disadvantage that was. I thought, but I like the 3 Riken as maybe the speed of the speeds in this race. Just his figures are a little higher, and he's definitely going to be on the front end in this race, I believe. So those are my 2, Riken and that 11, whatever it was.
Fort Worth. We have the same two.
Wow,
I think
that's
it'll
encouraging.
Be, yeah, I think it'll be okay. I think from going one turn, these outside posts, I mean, it depends on days where there are days up here where it's hard to be 3 and 4 wide, and forward has definitely helped. But I think Fort Worth has so much finish that it'll be able to find a spot, let the speeds go. And if speed holds, I think it'll be Riken. And if they start to crack and you can come wide and somebody's going to come wide and finish, I think it's going to be Fort Worth. I might use as a backup or in exact as anyway also 1 other who's the 6, Gandhi Dancing. I thought has shown some promise exiting a tough trip, could move forward. I always like that string of local workouts, mm-hmm. Especially early in the meet. But that's a minor opinion. I'm definitely with you on the 11 and the 3 in our 8th race as we start to narrow down this late pick 5 and we move on to our featured race of the day, the Birdstone Stakes. Unusual stuff here, going 1.75 miles on the Saratoga dirt. And I like a horse in here that might be a decent price, and I have a little bit of a weird theory on, so I'll tell my story, and then you can tell me if it sounds crazy. Number 5, American Tattoo, has run well going this far in the past, and I was concocting an idea where this horse could have a pace advantage if the connections of the 6 Moretti are a little bit worried about the trip and therefore are a bit passive early. I was wondering if American Tattoo couldn't get out there and maybe be a little bit difficult to reel in at a price. Moretti certainly makes sense on form and is one I'd use ideally as a backup. I'm a little interested in Standard Deviation, the 1 as well. On breeding, fits going long. And while the form is underwhelming on dirt, the horse was okay on it. Blinkers, the trainer, a couple of reasons why I'd like to have the one and the six as backups, but I really like the five American Tattoo in this spot.
That's an interesting evidence supporting that. Now I'll have to take a hard look at him. Certainly his form last year would support that between the figures and his running style. I don't know. He was in some graded stakes races this year, so maybe technically this is a drop down into the Birdstone. Granted, it's, you know, the distance is very quirky that you never see it. I was willing to single Moretti in this just based on Pletcher's history in this race. He's won it four times since 2011, and it's not because he's training horses for a mile and three quarters, but he recognizes one in his barn who this might suit him, and so he's been able to spot this race. And you know, Moretti certainly has, you know, he's run long. He's won at a mile and three eighths, granted on a sloppy sealed track at Belmont in June. But if I was going to single, now I hate to go back to yesterday, but I singled Tom's Day Tot after getting nosed in the first leg and then winning the next three, which is
typical.
Kind of my, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln moment? But Moretti, I thought, seemed like a really logical single, which I'm always looking for in this pick five, just to, from a ticket building standpoint, so you can spread elsewhere if you don't really have a strong opinion in the other races.
It makes sense. I mean, the horse has the best form and figures. You make a great point about Pletcher, and I think that's no accident. I think it's down to a couple of things. Certainly what you said about his ability to recognize the ones in his barn who can pass that test. But also, I think there's something in the way he trains. There's a certain trip that a lot of Pletcher horses get towards the front, kind of grinding on the dirt. That could play very, very well in here. And as you talk about it, I realize I do need to go co-A's there with Moretti and my funny idea with American Tattoo. But let's move this on to race number 10, our nightcap. We've got three and up maiden claimers going, they are priced at 30K, and they're going a mile and an eighth. So definitely a little bit of a stamina test for these. And Mike, I'll ask you the question we ask all our guests in these last legs. How are we going to get paid?
We get paid with the three or the eight. Three is Guanafina, and the eight is Double Advantage. I kind of really like the three a little bit more. I'm waiting for Jeremiah Englehart to heat up a little bit. He's had some strong Saratogas the last few years. He hasn't really done a lot yet this year. There were a couple percentages they showed, like he's 34% in maiden claimers with a fairly big sample size, 85, you know, races. The horses by Bernardini, I expect a mile and an eighth ought to be in his wheelhouse. I'm not a huge pedigree person, but something like that might be a signal to me. So I got the three Guanafina and kind of the eight is my second one to throw in there. I think he's got some room to improve, and he's got some good percentages under him too, like maiden second star, 24% for Pletcher. So, and he's 4-1. So I got two kind of in the similar price range. You know, the price is really spread out in this race, so you could go a lot of different ways based on that. But, you know, the three Guanafina is the one that I kind of was zeroing in on.
And ran well in the off going. Might even have a mud mark if such things still existed.
I wish.
And it could. And if the rain does come, I would definitely upgrade that one. Just two others I'll mention for folks who are planning to spread in this race. The one Striking Speed I thought was very logical. And this is just one of these pet angles I come back to over and over in maiden races. Droppers who've shown speed in the past with a clean getaway could be dangerous from down there. And then I did want to mention the number 9 Height as well. Coming out of some pretty blah efforts, but first time going long on the dirt, and a task I thought the pedigree suggested might be okay. And there's certain distances that I look much more to pedigree. The sort of run of the mill 6 furlong races, mile and a 16th races, I rarely look at it, but a lot of times in certain situations, 7 furlongs or 9 furlongs or any time on the turf, you're going a mile and an eighth or certainly longer than that. I do try to look for some pointers that way. So Height, number 9, maybe not a bad one to have on here. So how much can you play when you're working, or does work pretty much just take all the oxygen?
The funny thing is, back in the day, that you actually used to have a live teller, and this was before everybody was doing everything online and cards and all that stuff. There was literally a live human being in the press box, and there would be a line of live human beings waiting to bet with that person. And then that kind of got phased out because of two things. A, the technology, people do it that way more, and B, press box is a lot less populated these days, like dramatically from, you know, not even 30 years ago when I started, but 10 years ago. So there's no need for someone in there. But since the beginning of this meet, I haven't played a lot. There's been a couple. I won't do it unless I'm kind of feel like I'm caught up with my work, so I'm not getting out of here at 9 o'clock at night instead of, you know, a more manageable 7 o'clock. But I will look at some things. I think last Sunday I had an opportunity where I had a little lull there where I could play a few races. So, I mean, I'll play it on my laptop or my phone or whatever, and I will look for opportunities. One myth I want to dispel is that a lot of people figure because we're on the backstretch talking to horsemen all the time that we get all these hot tips and everything. And I'll dispel that by saying that they're just like coaches who are not going to send any bad vibes out there and tell you any, like, they're not going to say, well, I don't even know why I'm in this race with this horse. You're never going to hear that. I mean, you can read some subtle things behind the lines that might be useful, but I frequently get, hey, you got any hot stuff for me? And I was like, you don't want to hear from me because all I'm getting is the, you know,
platitudes.
Oh, yeah. That's putting it mildly.
Godding up the opponent and all that stuff.
Right. There's a certain gaseous metaphor that I think that we can make in this.
Some wind. One more question for you before we get out of here.
Sure.
As somebody who loves racing but covers sports more generally, what's it been like to have racing throughout all this time when the other sports have been on pause? And how much is your job fixing to change right now with so much other sport coming back into the mix?
You go home and you bow down and thank you know, praise to the racing gods on a daily basis, because it hasn't even been just the Saratoga meet. It's back when, you know, racing was going on in March and April. We had things to follow there and keep track of. So really, it's been a godsend to have something live to cover. I mean, I covered the opening day of trout fishing season on April 1st, if that's considered a live event. Other than that, it was a lot of fall between drinks of water. So when racing, you know, started up here, it's like I had a couple of weeks there where, you know, I worked Monday through Friday off season, and I had a couple of Sundays where I was like, okay, dude, what are you doing this week? And not often, but every once in a while. These days, that doesn't. Now it's a case of what am I not going to be able to do this week? It's been a godsend for sports writers. Once the season's over, it's going to be a different animal, and we'll, you know, it's going to be hard with a lot of the, you know, we're heavy into high schools and colleges around here, and you know, most of them aren't going to be playing. A lot of them are still in limbo, but there's always stories out there, and there's always things to sniff around and find and write about. So we'll be okay.
It'll be your talents may be stretched, but they are ample, and I'm confident you'll continue coming up with great opportunity. Absolute last question. For more from you, Mike, where can people follow you in social media, and where can they find your work? And you're a broadcasting natural. Are you doing much broadcasting?
Yeah. No, I mean, I've got a face made for radio and a voice made for print, I guess. but you can find me at Twitter at Mike_McAdam. That's MacAdam. And you can find all my stuff on dailygazette.com is our website. I'm on Facebook too, but I'm not going to even give you that because I don't even know what my handle is. I use it so infrequently, and I'm, you know, so the Facebook is kind of a dry well, but Twitter, Mike_McAdam, MacAdam. And dailygazette.com is our website.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. What a fun and enjoyable visit that I needed this morning. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you. Appreciate our friends at the Brentwood. We're going to be back here Wednesday night after the races. There is rain in the forecast, but it's meant to be early. This will be not a rain event. So it is not. It will be only if the weather is decent. You can look back for updates. If you go ahead and give your donation for the event to the TRF over at trfinc.org/players. Obviously, if it gets rained out, we'll do it a different time. There'll be a rain check, as it were, and we hope folks will join us then for that official kickoff to this Travers Week. That's going to do it. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!